The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very, very good morning to you. How are you?
Boker Tov. So apparently the war has begun, although we don't always know which war we're fighting. There's so many different things going on. What with situation in the USA, which is really expanding everywhere. I mean, we're actually seeing in Israel some effects of, you know, some of those riots and protests in the USA coming to Israel. Of course, everybody has their own cause that they're trying to fight, but everybody's trying to ride this wave. It's very, very interesting to watch, to be honest.
Yeah, and obviously I think the war that he's talking about is the COVID war here in
absolutely.
The war that
but we've got a few wars going on.
Yeah, we do.
I get that war, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, really, we're all really fighting that war, but it's unfortunately not the only one. It tends to take our eye off other things.
Absolutely right. The Israeli High Court of Justice yesterday ruled that the 2017 settlement law is unconstitutional and is now nullified, has nullified the law. What is the settlement law and what is the impact of striking it down?
So this is, I think, a very substantial decision taken yesterday by the High Court of Justice. The law was enacted in 2017. And the settlements law was effectively an attempt to retroactively legalize something like 4,000 units that had been built in areas around Judea and Samaria that were actually not legal in terms of having received appropriate authorization from the government. So this was over a period of time. People had taken it in their own hands to build homes, to build units, to build settlements on land that some of it is very, very questionable in terms of ownership, and certainly the construction of those units hadn't been approved by the government as is required by law. And therefore, what the Knesset attempted to do 3 years ago was to retroactively legalize 4,000 of these units. It doesn't mean that all of these unauthorized units were caught up in this law, but as many as 4,000, which is a substantial number. And it also involved, as I said before, land which had some questionable ownership issues associated with it. People were claiming ownership on land and that construction had taken place illegally on land that wasn't owned by the people who had constructed the unit. So the Knesset enacted this law, and a number of different organizations decided to bring it to the High Court of Justice to challenge the Knesset's decision. And yesterday, the Knesset, by an 8-1 majority, 9 justices on the bench, only 1 dissenting judge, 8 judges agreed that this law should not stand as it is. They called it unconstitutional. It seems a little strange because we don't actually have a constitution, so I'm not quite sure how it could be unconstitutional. But effectively, those 4,000 units now become illegal as they were when they were first constructed, and the court has decided that the Knesset doesn't have the right to simply blanket approve them in the way that this law did. So I think this is a very, very substantial decision. Interestingly, the Attorney General also did not agree with the law to begin with, so he very much is on the side of the judges who have taken this decision. And it's not quite clear what's going to happen now with regard to those 4,000 units. The government has been known in the past to dismantle illegally constructed units where they really have been offensive, and the government has refused to approve them, and people have just gone ahead on their own volition and constructed homes, settlements, and the government has even sent the army in on the occasion to dismantle those. So it's not exactly clear where these 4,000 units now stand, but I think that there are a few messages that are being sent very, very clearly. The first of which is independent judiciary. This is a massively important message that we need to send to not only to people living in Israel, but indeed to people outside of Israel. And it links in a little bit to the discussion that we had yesterday about the International Criminal Court, which is looking to try to get more deeply involved in the Israel-Palestinian conflict. And the court was trying to decide whether they could rely upon the Israeli High Court of Justice to be independent and to lay down international law. And I think this decision yesterday also sends a message to the International Criminal Court saying that our judiciary is independent and it does apply international law where it is appropriate to apply it. So I think that that's one thing. The second thing is, you know, some people are calling this law, the 2017 settlements law, creeping annexation. You know, one comment that I wish to make about the whole annexation discussion is that we need to just remember that in the event that there might be annexation, and the annexation that's being discussed really at the moment seems to be limited more to parts of the Jordan Valley rather than to a more blanket annexation, because yesterday we did say what area does it cover, and it's not exactly clear, but I think the focus really is on a land within the Jordan Valley. But the point is that if an annexation was applied, then it would really just cement the current status quo rather than changing the status quo. And I think it's important to emphasize that nothing is going to be changed, because effectively, even though Israeli law is not being applied in those areas, it is under the control of the COGAT, of the office that is responsible for administering these territories, which is an Israeli organization. And that essentially, this is Israeli administered in every sense of the word. And there is no attempt through the annexation to take land that is currently being administered by the Palestinian Authority. That is not part of the plan. So, you know, the annexation discussion is just simply about taking what exists today and has existed already for some time and just legalizing the situation, drawing more solid boundaries around it rather than the very, very large pencil boundaries that exist. So I think this decision by the High Court of Justice is a good decision, an interesting one. We will have to see what happens to those 4,000 unauthorized units now as a result of that decision. I'm not sure what they will do about that.
Yeah, it'll be fascinating to follow the story. The government has decided to freeze Shin Bet's coronavirus tracing bill. But why isn't this being pursued?
For those people who were listening up throughout the whole closed down period for corona here in Israel, you might have heard me talk about the fact that the Shin Bet were actually tracing people through phone information. Firstly, for the purpose of trying to identify people who might have come into contact with known coronavirus victims and therefore go to those people and say, you might not know it, but you were in close contact with somebody else who actually has been diagnosed with corona. Therefore, you need to go into isolation, even though you would never have known had we not been able to trace your movements through your phone. That was the first thing. And of course, the second thing was that the Shin Bet were using this phone information in order to track people who were supposed to be in isolation, in quarantine, and for some reason were not sticking to the rules of quarantine, so for enforcement purposes as well. And eventually the High Court decided that even though the emergency regulations were okay, they were just essentially enacted by the government at the time that was in place, the stand-in government until the formal government actually was formed, the High Court was asked to rule on this particular issue because it really is an invasion of privacy. I mean, you couldn't get a greater invasion of people's privacy than tracking your movements through your phone. And before we even knew it, the government had enacted this, and the Shin Bet was following every movement of every citizen in Israel through their phones. And so the High Court said it's okay for now, but that the Knesset will need to enact a law which supports this idea of the Shin Bet following people's movements. And interestingly enough, the Shin Bet chief, Nadav Argaman, himself said that the Shin Bet is actually not feeling so comfortable with having to use such methods to trace and monitor people who are with, they had a corona, who've been diagnosed to check whether they're staying in quarantine. And neither were they that comfortable, having to monitor people's movements in order to warn them that they had been in contact with a corona victim. And instead, he said, it would be better for people to download a civilian app, which has been developed for the same purpose, whereby as soon as you download the app, you effectively choose. You make a choice that this is what you want. You download the app onto your phone, and then you get notified if you've been in the proximity of someone who's known to have corona. But if you don't want to be traced by this app, then you have the choice not to download it. And I think that that is the critical issue here, that everybody has the choice to decide to what extent they want their privacy protected or to what extent they want to be notified in the event that they might come into contact with somebody with corona. So the Shin Bet were feeling a little uneasy about it. And essentially, the Knesset has now decided not to pursue this bill, which I think is probably the right thing to do, because there were just so many people feeling uncomfortable about the massive invasion of privacy that we've been seeing in our lives, not only in this respect, but in every possible respect with regard to this corona issue.
Yeah, very, very. The good thing is at least Israel is, I mean, I know numbers have increased, but at least Israel does seem to be on the right side of it. For the second time in the space of a month, an Etihad plane has landed at Ben Gurion Airport. That's to bring emergency supplies to the Palestinian authorities and Gaza. But hold on. I thought last time it was sent back.
So this is just the weirdest thing, right? Because less than a month ago, we had this no-name brand, white-label plane, which was actually an Etihad plane that arrived at Ben Gurion Airport to bring all these emergency supplies, and the Palestinian Authority rejected the supplies. It now turns out that actually the Israeli government decided to unload the supplies and to send them to Gaza, which I think is at least a good result as to what happened, because the Palestinian Authority, you may recall, decided that they did not want to be the reason why Israel and the Arab world are forming diplomatic relations. That, you know, the Arab world can turn around and say, well, you know, we had this first flight in spite of no diplomatic relations because we were bringing emergency supplies for you guys. They don't want to be held responsible for that particular situation. And yet, yesterday, the Etihad plane was back at Ben Gurion Airport, this time with full livery, no white label plane this time. Wonderful. A full labeled Etihad flight came in. It seems as if, though, the same result will take place with regard to the goods on board. It seems as if, though, the Palestinian Authority, the same as last time, is going to reject the goods again. It's got ventilators, it's got all types of emergency equipment that I'm sure that any country would be very, very grateful to receive, and not only grateful to receive, but grateful to receive without cost. I mean, this seems a really, really crazy thing. So the foreign ministry has indicated that in the event that these goods are rejected again as the last time by the Palestinian Authority, that they will simply be sent to Gaza, where I'm sure they will be put to good use. I think some of them were in any event destined to go to Gaza, but to the extent that the Palestinian Authority decides they don't want their share, I'm sure that the Gazans will be happy to accept it. So again, another flight by Etihad landing at Ben Gurion, this time with full labels on board. Let's hope that the goods will be put to good use this time.
Yeah, it's absolutely bizarre. Bar Rafaeli and her mother have reached a plea bargain with the authorities in terms of which her mother will serve jail time for evading taxes. Wow. Wow, that's a very nice mother.
This is a story. This is a story. This is a real story. Bar Rafaeli, I guess people more or less know who she is. She's a celebrity. She's a model. She's an actress. Someone who's been on the international stage lately, also a TV presenter. She's quite famous because she had a relationship at one point with Leonardo DiCaprio. And in fact, this particular case surrounds the time that she was actually going out with Leonardo DiCaprio, because she claimed to the Israeli tax authorities that she wasn't actually based in Israel at that time, that she was having a relationship with DiCaprio. She was living in the United States, and therefore she claimed that whatever income she earned during that time should not have been taxed in Israel, and it wasn't, she didn't volunteer to pay tax on that income during that period. The tax authorities found otherwise, and the courts actually also agreed with the tax authorities, saying that this was all just a facade and evading taxes illegally. So finally, they came to a plea bargain, and the strange thing is that even though the income was Bar Rafaeli's income, her mother is the one who will be going to prison. And the reason for that is that her mother volunteered to say, well, I was her business manager. I was responsible for everything that happened with her affairs. So if you're going to punish anybody, then you should punish me. So I think that this is really just a very nice mother who's taking the fall on behalf of her daughter.
Wow.
Yeah, who obviously has young children and doesn't really want to have to suffer not only the indignity but the inconvenience of having to spend a period of time in jail. Her mother has been sentenced to 16 months in prison, would you believe, for this particular offense. In addition to that, Bar Rafaeli herself has been sentenced to do community service for, I think, a 9-month period. And not only that, but she will pay taxes on income that she evaded at the time. I think that runs to something like 8 million shekels. Wow. And she will also have to pay a fine of about 2.5 million shekels. So this is going to be very, very expensive. But strangely enough, it's mom who's going to jail rather than the person who really evaded the taxes.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. What a mother. What a mother. I mean, what do you buy somebody like that on Mother's Day?
I was just thinking that, Howard. How would you steal my thoughts like that?
It is 8 o'clock. Anthony Rock, thank you as always. Unbelievable. All right. Melinda says, sports answer, please. All right. I am sorry. I meant to actually tell you that before, Anthony Rock. I always do mean to tell you that, give you the answer, but I always forget or often forget.